Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts on Recovery, broadcasting to you from the We Believe Tower on the 10th floor in Midtown Atlanta, over Majestic Buckhead. Now, today, we return to talking about recovery. We have used this program for a couple of months to continue with what was happening in the political arena, but that's no longer necessary, and we're returning to really our first love, to what we're really called to do, and that is to talk about people, to help people recover. Now, on Jack Watts on Recovery, we talk a lot about recovering from religious abuse. Today, we're going to talk about alcoholism. And I've already got a caller here. Hold on a second. Good afternoon. This is Jack Watts. You're on the air. Hello? Well, I guess we lost that caller, and I'm going to bring on another. Good afternoon. This is Jack Watts. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Jack, I'm on.
Oh, both of you are on. There you go. I've got Jack. I'm Jack is who I am, and I've got Stacy and Dick. All right, now.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi there.
Okay, we're talking about alcoholism. I have been sober for almost 20 years, and I used AA to do it. Now, my brother, how long has it been since you've had a drink, Dick?
1984.
84 or 94? 84. 84. So that's like 28 years. Is that right? Now, why did you stop drinking?
20. What's that?
Why did you stop drinking?
Well, I didn't consider myself an alcoholic because I wasn't drinking every day. But I found myself on Monday mornings going to work with a beer hangover and saying, you know, life should be better than this. So the following week, I said, I'm going to try not drinking and see what happens. And I felt so much better all the time, I just quit.
Well, good for you. There are a lot of people that just stop drinking. But there are those that can't. And I want to talk a little bit about my niece. Our niece, yes.
Yeah.
And we'll call her June. Because I believe that's the month that she was born in. Well, June.
Actually, she was born on Christmas Day.
Oh, that's right. We'll call her Chris. Yeah. We'll call her Chris.
Chris, there you go.
All right. Chris had troubles from the very beginning because my older brother is an out-of-control alcoholic and drug addict. And she never had a chance. And at an early age, she started drinking. And the reason that we're talking about Chris this afternoon is she was diagnosed with hepatitis C maybe 5 years ago. And she went to rehab and she went back out and started drinking. She got sick, went back to rehab again, went to rehab to my knowledge, at least three or four different times, staying as long as a month at a time in an effort to get sober, going to meetings, going, you know, being in lockdown situations where she couldn't get alcohol so that she could detoxify, and yet she went back to drinking. Now, as a result of this hepatitis C, she has her kidneys are shut down, and she's dying. And she's not going to live much longer. I mean, she'd be lucky if she makes it a month. And that is a pretty difficult sentence. Alcohol has cut her life short by 20 years, maybe 30. Now, there are a lot of people like that. In AA, you know, we say that, you know, that alcoholism kills. And this is a perfect example of it. But more than that, it does things to other people that are in the family and that are friends and everything else. The impact of it is devastating. All negative, and it's like a self-imposed sentence of death. Add something to that, Dick. What is it that, I mean, you're in the family.
I also think that, you know, alcoholics, most alcoholics don't even admit to the fact that they're alcoholics. They say, you know, I don't have a drinking problem at all. And things that are happening to Chris, they say, well, I mean, I don't have that kind of a problem, so that would never happen to me. So it's, you and I both found out yesterday from our nephew, who also has a problem.
Oh yeah, big time.
Yeah, that the same that this is happening, and obviously the timing of it, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Chris. I guess listening to her brother, our nephew, saying that for all intent and purposes, she won't see another birthday. So that in and of itself is sad. I mean, our nephew knows he has a problem, but he can't seem to lick it. His has both alcohol and drugs. And
well,
I think both of us make this, a lot of this falls back on our brother in the way he brought these children up. But
well, and of course, I'm sure that that's true, but you go back a generation earlier, and our mother and father were both alcoholics, and our mother, an out-of-control alcoholic who would get drunk twice a day and pass out. Twice a day, not once, twice, and this was routine, and for years, she would either be the nicest woman in the world or just as mean as a snake, you know, based on where she was on the cycle of that day in the alcoholism, of course, you know, what did that do? That the imprint of what a woman should be that we received was one of extreme dysfunction. And we didn't have any, and you know what the psychologists call good modeling. Neither did our older brother, although he saw less of it than we did. We saw more, and our younger sister saw a lot more than we did as the alcoholism took its toll on our mom. Now, let me just say this to the audience. Our mom, Dixon, my mom, got cirrhosis, and they told her she was going to die. And so she stopped drinking cold turkey and didn't die and got well, lived with Dick for years and, you know, for 10 years. And she was just delightful. She was fun. Every once in a while, without our knowing it, she would take a nip, but we didn't know that at the time. But she was really essentially alcohol-free for a decade. That really made her kind of the mom that we had always hoped that we would have. Then she ended up getting cancer of the liver and did die from that when she was 80 years old. Now,
Jack, I think you have to also have to tell the audience, though, that I think both of us think that part of our mother's drinking had something to do with our father. And when our father died is when my mother came to live with me a couple of years after he died, and at that point had given up alcohol, and as you said, was a delight. And I think part of it was alcohol and part of it was not having to face our father every day.
Well, I think that there's a great deal to that. And, of course, just for anybody that's interested, I wrote a book about this that Simon & Schuster published. It's my story. It's called Hi, My Name is Jack. And if you're interested in it, you go to my website, which is just www.jackwatts.me. Now, most people have .com, but I have .me because it's all about me. But it's www.jackwatts.me.
While you're at it, why don't you give the phone number, too?
I mean, the story's the in there, and exactly what it was and the root of all of it, but at the pathology of our entire family, at the core of it, is alcoholism, and alcoholism runs in families, and and we seem to run to it rather than away from it, because everybody has trouble with it. There isn't anybody in our family that hasn't had trouble with alcohol. And here's our niece, who dying essentially a generation before she would have of natural causes, because she couldn't put it down. She could, and part of that was the dealing with her father, who was the son of our father, and it goes back, and the sins of the fathers are passed on to the second and third generation. Stacy, tell me, is there anything that you want to say about this as we're talking about it?
Well, I too grew up with an alcoholic father, and he was the product of an alcoholic home. Now, my brother nor I drink or have a problem with it, but we have suffered the consequences of growing up in that home.
What would those consequences be? Give us an example or two.
Well, I married somebody just like my father and created the same dysfunctional home. Even though I was totally repulsed by my father, I had no relationship with him, period. I can remember
hiding. Was he abusive?
Yes. Yeah. Extremely abusive. He was violent.
Was he violent when he wasn't drunk?
No.
was he kind at that point? I mean, was he the kind of father you wanted when he didn't have a snootful?
Well, no.
No.
That didn't happen very often.
Wow.
He was drunk most of the time.
Now, did
he
hold out
his job, too? He would go on binges for weeks. I beg your pardon?
Was he employed at the time, too, with this?
Yes, he had a very successful outdoor advertising business.
Now, and alcohol was still a major part of his life.
Well, he's deceased now. And I believe that he stopped drinking 6 months before he died because he was sick.
Now,
I virtually have no feeling for him.
Oh.
Say that one more time, please.
I virtually have no feeling for him. He's a man who was my father, but I never knew him and didn't want
only.
To.
He was your father in name only. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sad. But you never really had a male role model in your life.
No, I didn't.
No. What would make you want to go back to a person that was similar to your father, or did you not know that at the time?
I didn't know that at the time.
Oh, that's...
I mean, I was very young.
That's the other thing, is that when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, you don't know it's dysfunctional. It's normal to you because that's all you know.
Exactly.
You know, I knew that there was a lot that I didn't like. And when I graduated high school, I graduated when I was 17 and became 18 about a week later. And when I was 18 and a month, I left for college to go to the University of Georgia from Newton, Massachusetts. And essentially, I never went back. It was like, I am so glad to be done with all of that dysfunction. But what I didn't know was I brought it with me. It was inside me because it's what I had been programmed to be. So
exactly.
it took decades to do some things differently. Now, I made a choice 20 years ago. I went to AA and I picked up a chip and I said, I don't want to drink anymore and I am going to turn, you know, my life over to God as I understand him. And I understand him to be, you know, Almighty God, the Father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Christian God. I wouldn't have do anything differently. But even though I'd been a Christian for a long time, I had to do all of the work to kind of get back to wholeness. But I was willing to do it, and the reason was I wanted to try and break the cycle that had been passed on from my father to me, instead of me passing it on to my children and grandchildren. I wanted to break it in some way so that they wouldn't have to go through some of the things that, you know, that I went through. And, you know, my youngest daughter, Katie, she really has no knowledge of me, no memory of me drinking. She's 26. And, you know, I mean, you know, she was 6 years old when I stopped. So 6 years old, you know, she may have said, you know, I remember you having a beer in your hand one time or something like that. But she never had the things that came along with it. Now, Chris never had that with her father. In fact, after she was diagnosed with the hepatitis C, and which is essentially, you know, you don't ever drink again. It's a death sentence if you do, but she continued to do it. And when her dad, our brother, would come to her house, he'd bring wine. They were drinking buddies. When he knew that this was something that would kill her. What kind of father does that? Could you imagine doing, you know, knowing that your child was, you know, was life was threatened because of something bringing the poison into the house? You see, this is what happens to people, and they live in such massive denial that they say it will never happen to me. I see these kids smoking cigarettes, and I look at them and I think, they have no idea. We buried Dick's wife close to 15 years ago, and she died 35 years earlier than her time because of lung cancer. Very aggressive. She was diagnosed and died within 6 weeks. Went from a beautiful woman, just shriveled to nothing. It was one of the most tragic things in my entire life, and sobering. But she could never give up the cigarette. That's the addiction. That's the strength of this pathology that, you know, that we have to deal with. And it's very hard. And here, our family, even though Chris has been estranged from us essentially for years, you know, based on other pathology, all of which is in that book, Hi, My Name is Jack, that you can get at www.jackwatts.me. Take a look at it. But, I mean, I've written the whole thing out. I mean, because it just was so crazy that we had to make some sense of it. And here we're talking about this. Dick and I sat down with Chris a little over 2 years ago and talked to her about the alcoholism and about how she, you know, she needed to stay away from it, the whole thing. And specifically I offered to help and said, what can I do, you know, to help you stay away from this stuff, knowing that it would kill her? And yet her father brought wine when he'd come to visit. Not once, not twice, every time. So they would drink, and now he's losing his drinking buddy.
Gosh, I don't know what to say, Jack. It's tragic.
This is awful. This is just this and terrible, terrible, destructive stuff. Not everybody's an alcoholic. Some people can have a drink, and you know, and they're fine, and they, you know, and they don't think about it. But if you've got that part of you that has that addictive part, you gotta deal with it. When I would go to these AA meetings sometimes, and particularly when I would at a year thing, when I would pick up a chip, you know, to mark the time in sobriety, I would bring my daughter Katie. And when she was 7 years old, she gave me my 1 year chip. And then she gave me 5, 10, and 15, like that. And I would tell her, I'd say, okay, there's alcoholism in your mom's side of the family. On mine, everybody. What do you think your chances are of it not being a problem for you? And she'd say, you know, almost none. Now she's 26. She doesn't think, I've examined it. I don't think that I've got a problem with it. And she may not. But it has a thing of coming and biting her in the butt. And once it does, getting back to wholeness is one of the most difficult things in the world to do. And you know what? It isn't just like, okay, 10% of Americans are alcoholic. But everybody's impacted by it. I mean, hey, there are very few families that don't have to deal with this. We don't have, the three of us don't have any alcoholism in things that are happening with us right now, but we're talking extensively based on something that's happening in Dick's and my family. And it's going to be a very, very hard and, you know, bitter cold swallow. And yet, you know, the foolishness of people, well, I just never thought it would happen, and, you know, isn't this sad and tragic? Well, it's preventable, too. The only, alcohol is the only disease in the world that has to be self-diagnosed.
Stacy, are you not with your husband anymore that had a problem?
No, we've been divorced for many years.
Oh, so you do not have any alcohol problems in your family at this point. Is there children?
No, neither one of my children did, nor did my brother or I, which I think is pretty unusual.
Yeah, well.
And out of my dad's brothers, he was the only one.
How many brothers?
Yeah.
He had three brothers.
Let me just correct this a little bit. She has problems of alcoholism in her family, and they're always there. No matter, things get healed, God takes care of things, but there are parts that are there that make you see things differently, and some of it can make you wiser, but the impact, once it's there, is always there. So
absolutely.
It's managing it rather than, you know, well, it's gone, because it's never gone. There's never a time. You haven't had a drink in 28 years, and yet when you think about our dad, you know, they aren't pleasant thoughts still. So, you know, there's some things that are residual that, you know, that just go on and on and on, and you have to manage them more than just be, you know, all of this stuff about, well, you can conquer this. Well, when it comes to alcoholism, you know, once something happens, you know, it's always there. I've had people tell me, say, well, you haven't had anything to drink for 20 years. You're not an alcoholic anymore. You can go out and have one.
No, doesn't work
people
that way.
People tell me that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
It doesn't work that way.
No. And we know that. But people that, you know, there's so much, and for something that plagues our entire society, it's amazing to me how ignorant people are about alcoholism.
Yeah.
On our, we offer some books on some of these things and how to help with it. Stacy, tell everybody the name of a book or two and where they can go.
Okay, our website is www.mcgeepublishing.com, MCGEE. And we have one of the best programs for conquering chemical dependency. And the Alabama prison system has like a 90% success rate, which is virtually unheard of. And that's the only real statistic that I have to go on, but a chaplain who manages 5 prisons has provided me with that information. We also have another awesome book called The Search for Significance, which teaches you who you are in the Lord. And when you truly grasp who you are in the Lord, you can overcome anything.
Yeah,
alcoholism,
you can.
Depression,
anything. All right, I'm gonna have to just cut this short. Just out of time, and just let me say, we'll keep up with what what's happened to Chris, and God bless you, and thank you so much for your time today. Bye-bye.
Bye.